Welcome to the Startup Dentist Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Trutter. After over 800 plus successful dental startups, I'm here to share everything I know about starting a profitable and purposeful dental practice with you. In each episode, we get right to the core of what it takes to launch and grow a successful dental practice. So whether you've just started researching dental startups or you've been sitting on the fence for a while, this podcast is your personal roadmap to your very own dental practice. Let's get into it.
Welcome back. If you're getting ready for your startup, and one of the big things that you're kind of scared about is, I know dentistry, but I lack the business skills. Then check out one of my most recent episodes where I interview Stacy Peters, who is the director of the Startup MBA Ideal Practices. She lays down some wisdom on topics like hiring strategies, especially in this environment, having the right business foundational elements underneath you to really build up those muscle groups so that you're more confident on the business side of dentistry. So check out that episode today. Singing lesson. No, actually, money. Okay, that was bad. But we're going to talk about some money today. We need to talk about how to prepare for you to get the best funding for your startup. The best funding that will help you truly launch your practice as opposed to like just get open and hope you can scrape by. So grab your notebook or your laptop and let's make this startup a breathing and thriving reality. Banks. We need to get prepared to talk to banks. Yes, funding is one of the most important things in order to do this. How you prepare before you talk to banks, how you prepare during that process, and how you work through that entire process will get you the best elements for your startup. One of the things I talk about at our course, and even I talk about in our book, I call this the silver platter method. So I'm going to share with you some wisdom there, which is about how do you prepare yourself on a silver platter before these banks so that you're in the best position, more in control? Because what I want you, each and every one of you, to do is this: be able to approach banks with confidence because you had a plan that gets you the best funding. One of the things I hear a lot of times from a number of our clients that have gone through our program is the banks come back and say, those doctors were the best prepared. We got the best funding because they were the best prepared. Being prepared will put you in the best position so that you just don't walk into a bank. And I don't think people even physically walk in the banks anymore, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I want you to approach the banks with confidence, say, I get the best plan in order to get the best funding. So you're saying to them, who wants me, as opposed to begging them, please take me, please give me the funding. So we're going to put you in a much better, stronger position to have these conversations with the banks. Help you get prepared. Also, be able to obtain the best funding. Understand the different banks that are out there. What am I looking at? What do I need to consider when it comes to funding? How to prepare for that funding? And then lastly, okay, now that I got the funding, what do I do with it? How do I spend my money wisely? Because a lot of the banks aren't going to tell you how to spend it. So you're going to be a little bit on your own. And what I don't want anybody to do is like get halfway through the project and go, whoop, blew through about $750,000 and my practice is about halfway built. No, that can't happen. So we're going to talk about all these different elements, how to prepare, how to put yourself in the best position, how to compare to different lenders out there, in the balance of like, how do I spend it wisely so that my doors properly open and I actually launch my practice. Now, one of the big things that may be on your mind is this: I have student loans, and I don't, but you're thinking to yourself like, I have student loans. You're telling me, Stephen, I got to borrow a lot more money to do this? Yeah. And I'll just say this. Nothing against Dave Ramsey. He has built an empire of wealth and done a really great job. But Dave Ramsey is the kind of guy that says, you can't do anything until you have all your debt paid off. Well, if that's the case, probably most of you here wouldn't have never gone to dental school if you couldn't borrow in order to open your door or actually become a dentist. So the same thing is going to hold true when it comes to opening your own startup is, yes, you're going to borrow funds. The other part about it, but I'll say this, it may seem counterintuitive, but the fastest path to paying off your student loans is to become a practice owner. Okay. And it will. I line up a number of financial advisors and people like that would come and say, yeah, the fastest path to paying off student loans is actually to own your own practice. So let's talk through that. We'll talk about some elements in terms of student loans. Number one, here's what I'm going to talk about first is know your finances. I would say no matter what, you should have some sort of financial advisor or somebody that's in your court that can today look at your finances and say, am I in the proper position to take the leap into practice ownership? Know where your student loans are. Know what those payments, understand what that looks like. Also understand your finances in terms of cash. What do you need in terms of cash? What do you need to live off of? So you need to have this knowledge base of what are your assets, what are your liabilities before you even talk to a bank. Because if you don't understand your own finances, you're not going to be able to tell the story to the banks because the banks are going to ask questions. you're going to sit down at some point on a phone call, probably with an underwriter. And I'll just say this, what you tell them, they don't forget. And what they see, they remember. So what you put down on paper and things like that needs to be very, very accurate. So you need to understand, even before taking this leap into practice ownership, know your finances, have a financial advisor, look at these elements in terms of like, whether it's life insurance and all these different elements, because life insurance, disability insurance, all these things, while they're not bank products, banks are going to require that you have them in most cases, or have proof of them, even in order for you to get the proper funding. So all these things kind of tie together. So having the right financial advisor and financial advising team will help you know your finances to make sure you're in the proper position today to actually approach lenders. Hey there, Startup Dentist podcast listeners. It's Stephen Trutter here, taking a quick break from today's episode to share something special with you. If you're dreaming of owning your own dental practice, then you need to get your hands on our Startup Dentist book. This isn't just any book. It's a 200 plus page comprehensive guide that covers everything you need to know to start a successful dental practice. From picking the perfect location to designing a patient-friendly office to building a marketing plan that draws in your ideal patients, we've got you covered. This book is packed with insider tips and real-world strategies. This kind of goes into the preparation. So, all right, you know your finances. Now you're going to prepare to have a conversation with the bank. Don't just pick up your phone and say, hey, bank, I'm Dr. So-and-so, and I want X amount of millions of dollars or whatever. Know this, lending today, and I'll talk about balance in a little bit. So what are you looking to borrow in today's environment? Somewhere between 500 and probably, $1 million. I know that's a large gap that's in there, but probably on average in today's environment, we're seeing practice owners needing somewhere between $650,000 to about $800,000. That depends on your marketplace, how big of a space, lots of different factors, but I'm just giving you like kind of the mental preparation. This is what you're going to need in this range. There are those people that have built practices probably somewhere at some point, one time in a marketplace years ago I built it for a couple hundred thousand dollars. Okay, well, what are the circumstances there? Was it already a built-out dental office, which is like a unicorn to find, like all these different things? So we're going to talk about balance of spending in a little bit, but I want to get everyone kind of their brains wrapped around, this is what is today's environment. This is what it's requiring in order to fund properly when it comes to a startup. So preparation. Now you know your finances, you're going to approach the banks. Before you do, know this, cash. Where are you at in terms of cash reserves? And we'll talk about your student loans. Banks today, so one of the big requirements for most banks is they want something that you have in terms of cash availability. Not necessarily a put down. Some banks will require that. And I'll talk about kind of comparing banks in a few moments. But generally speaking, you need to have about 5 to 10% of what you are going to borrow in liquid assets. So that's money market, that is checking, savings account, marketable securities, stocks, and things like that. Things that you can pull out today without penalty, like an IRA or like a 401k or something like that, a non-retirement assets. That's where you need to land. So what does that look like? You probably need to have somewhere between 35 and about 75,000, generally speaking, in liquid assets before you even approach the banks. How this works with your student loans, because some of you may be thinking, I'm going to rip down my student loan debt because the banks will really want me to make sure that, because I have a lot of student loan debt. Maybe you're that person that has a lot of student loan debt. And I'll kind of talk about kind of comparing these different elements. I will say this very, very clearly. If you are on IBR, an income-based repayment option, that's like, I think there's some programs out there like pay and repay and these different programs, anything that is based around your income and your payment is low on your student loans, stay there. Do not refinance out of that. Here's my example. Dr. A and Dr. B. Dr. A, I have $250,000 in student loans. I refinanced a couple of years, but my payment is $5,000 a month. Dr. B says, I got $450,000 in student loans, but my payment's only $1,500 a month because I'm on one of these programs. Dr. B might be more attractive to the bank. Why? Even though that person has almost double the amount of student loans, they have almost triple the payment per month. So while I'll say this, people say this term, cash is king. Now we're talking about cash flow. Cash flow is the kingdom when it comes to approaching lenders. So if you, and this goes into like the preparations, I'm going to go back to preparation. Your preparation when it comes to student loans is this. If you're sitting in the street today and you're thinking to yourself, I want to have a practice. I want to start my practice in the next couple of years. Then make sure that what you're doing with your student loans aligns with those near future plans. Your long-term future plans are paying down student loan debt. Your short-term might be making the minimum payment so that you have cash reserves. Because like when I talk at my course, at our course, or Startup Practice Blueprint, one of the big things I always leave everybody with is banks. And I have a bank on stage with me, so I'm grilling them. Banks would much rather you have cash in debt than neither of both. That makes sense? So if you went really aggressive and paid out your student loans and you went to a bank and said, I've got $2,000 in the bank, I don't have any student loans. Okay, not the end of the world. You need to get that $2,000 up to about $30,000 to $50,000 as quickly as possible in order for the bank to actually fund you and actually approve your request, because they don't want somebody who doesn't have that cash reserves. The other thing about cash reserves is this. You're working right now. Let's say you're working as an associate 5 days per week. Startups don't work this way. You don't start working on your startup and on Friday say, okay, I'm now going to open my practice on Monday. You're going to be putting time into your startup. That's how successful startups really, truly launch. The other thing is, if you're working 5 days a week, is your employer going to allow you to go down from 5 days a week to maybe 2 days a week so that when you open your practice, you can work 2 or 3 days a week in your own practice? Maybe not. Maybe, but because of that, you, those cash reserves are the other thing that banks are looking for in terms of the rainy day funds. I'm not telling you to put funds into your lending. Real estate is a different topic. We're talking about practice financing. There are banks that will fund you 100%. I'll talk about those differences in terms of banks and what to look out for. But most banks are going to have that cash reserves because of the rainy day funds. You will also need it because even when you open your doors, you probably will have a change in your income from your associate position. So those cash reserves may be paying for your rent or your mortgage, car payment for a little while as you kind of bridge that gap. So even when you launch a startup, you know, you're going to produce dentistry from day one, but you may not collect dentistry necessarily from day one. So those cash reserves may be there along with your working capital and things like that. So cash reserves are king. The other thing is this, have a plan. The other part of preparation to talk to banks is have a plan. Yeah, called a business plan, folks. Yes, you're building a business. Have a plan. Truth be told, some banks don't require a business plan. You need a business plan. Why? Because you're building a business. You need a so here, there's some, sometimes it makes a difference. Some lenders look at that business plan and say, okay, we're evaluating two different requests here. Maybe they're both general dentists. One dentist has a business plan that says things like the kind of work that they've done. They've told a story about the advanced services that they provide. Maybe they place implants. Maybe they do clear aligner technology. They're going to have all these different elements inside of the practice. The other doctor doesn't have a business plan. Doctor that has business plan that says, I'm going to do these other things, may get additional funding for the technologies, a digital scanner, a CBCT from day one, because the bank says, we have more confidence because you told us a story that says you are stronger, that you're doing these services. So that business plan can sway that funding one way or another. And some banks, I will say this, many banks will require a business plan. What goes into your business plan? I always say there's a couple different elements that need to go into your business plan. You need to be able to tell your story about who you are. I like to call this your executive summary. You need to talk about your demographics, like what is the opportunity that exists in that marketplace? You need to tell your marketing strategy. How are you going to get patients through the door? Because banks are going to say, here's your funding. Okay, how are you going to pay for this? Marketing. Tell the marketing story. How are you going to market? What are your strategies? You need to have a budget for your, obviously you need to have a budget. How are you going to spend? What are different categories? I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail. And you also need to have your projections. What are you going to make? How do you back into projections? I'll say this is you need to look at your procedure mix. What do you need to do? How does that work out per patient? And obviously this differs across different specialties and everything, but you need to have projections. Now, the one thing I always laugh about is it's called a business plan. It's not called a business guarantee. It's a plan, but it still is a roadmap for your own success. It's a roadmap, but this could adjust over time. I built multiple businesses and plans change, but have a plan because some banks, A, will require it, and B, it could be the difference between properly funding and maybe a little bit of underfunding. So that preparation is there before the banks. Now, comparing offers of banks, I'll say this. So now you got the preparation. Now you're getting your approvals. All right. Banks are going to vary. So one big thing to look at is not just interest rate. I think most people kind of go there first. They say, oh, interest rate. Yep. Interest rate is definitely one of the considerations when it comes to comparing banks. There's local banks, there's regional banks, there's larger banks. I always say this, go with a bank that understands our industry, understands your business. If you have to explain to a bank why an operatory or why a dental chair is so expensive, run away from that bank. If you have to explain your business, they won't understand your business. So big difference in terms of banks. There are a couple different banks that are out there too. And I'll even divide it up outside of the regional and national bank in different elements. There are asset-based banks, and then there are projection-based banks or lenders. Asset-based banks are typically going to be your local banks. They're going to say, you need to borrow $500,000, $600,000, $700,000. All right, what do you have to kind of like hedge up against that? What do you have in terms of assets that will mitigate our risk? Maybe you have a home. Maybe you have those cash reserves, or maybe you need to pledge those different elements. I remember a couple of years ago, one of our clients, maybe if some of you heard his story before, Dr. Brian, built a highly successful practice, over $1 million in his first 12 months. Really did just an awesome thing, continues to grow, just a great story. He had gone into a community and he said, I want to be a part of the community. He's definitely a part of the community. And one of the things he said was, I really want to talk and work with one of these local banks. Sure, we'll give it a try. Kind of knew where it was going to go, but like, let's go down this path. Month goes by, couple months goes by, lots of questions, answer the questions, put all these things together. And then the bank says, okay, well, we got everything. Now it's going to go to the committee. Ew, bank committees. You can imagine how fun those meetings can be with bankers and suits and committees and tearing through papers. Can't imagine the fun that they have. Committees and banks, ugh. Well, he got an approval. It was awesome. Awesomely horrible. They wanted Dr. Brian's in-laws, yes, his wife's parents, I don't make this up. They wanted his wife's parents to co-sign the loan and also put down $200,000 as collateral. Needless to say, we went a different direction. That's an asset-based lender, folks. Here's a bank. You want to borrow X? What do you have? That could involve houses, spouses, in-laws. Boy, I would not want to go to my in-laws, and I love them dearly, and say, hey, let's break some bread over the holidays, and thanks for funding my business. Awkward, 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 awkward. Okay, the opposite of that is what we call projection-based lenders. They're looking at projections. The other big thing that stands out with some banks sometimes is when you get with asset-based lenders, they also say they want the debt paid off quickly. What that means is they may get a great interest rate from the local bank or the regional bank, but the term is going to be really short because for them, the more debt that hangs out there for the bank, the more chance for that to go south and for that not to get repaid. Most lenders and dental specific lenders look the opposite way. They look at cash flow and say, ooh, if we can offer a longer term, maybe terms that are more flexible, something that maybe has a higher interest rate, but a longer term that doesn't force you into higher payments, maybe an interest only period, maybe no payments and things like that during construction, like all these different flexibility, they look at that and say it reduces the risk because now you have a lower payment. Also think about this. When you open your doors, what does a lower payment do for your cash flow inside of your practice? It has a hugely positive impact so that then you can continue to invest because part of like what your loan is paying for initially is not only your rent and your payroll and your marketing and all these different things, it also is paying for, in most cases, especially from day one for the first few months, it's your loan is actually paying your loan payments. So the higher your loan payments, you may need to make some sacrifices in terms of things like, boy, I want to do more marketing, but I have a higher loan payment. We're going to talk about that balance here in a few moments and how to spend that. So compare banks. Don't just look at interest rate, look at terms. Collateral. What do they require of me? Do I need to put cash down? What are there other conditions that are require me? What else do I need to have in terms of insurances and all these big things? And really understand that. And don't just look at interest rate and term. Look at what is that cash flow? What is the flexibility that this lender is going to provide? and really help support the growth of my practice. Okay, now that you've chosen the bank, most banks are really good at saying, here's your funds, but they're not going to tell you how to spend it. So this is where the balance comes in. So let's say you borrow $750,000. You may be thinking to, man, that's expensive. Like, I'll never spend that. In most cases, you will. In some cases, very quickly. And if you don't have a balance and you don't prioritize certain elements, it could get out of control. So coming down the street from my gym on my bike earlier today, one of my neighbors is moving. They're moving. A great couple, a great family, just moving to a different home in our neighborhood. And all the guys had the moving truck and everything, and they're moving things out. And I always think about this when it comes to moving. I've moved multiple times, my family. You always remember the big things, the sofa, you know, the beds, you know, like all those different things, like the big furniture, tables and chairs and all those things. And all of a sudden you have like, what am I going to do with the kitchen towels and the flashlights and like the laptop and things like that? Well, this kind of goes into a box of stuff. And that's what happens sometimes when it comes to your startup budget, because some banks will say, here's your three categories of your spending. You have construction, you have equipment, and you've got working capital. But let me tell you, folks, there's a lot of subcategories that need to go underneath there. Marketing, if you hire a consultant, legal fees, if you're leasing space, you need to have, you know, a deposit for your lease. All the small elements, signage. I'm just giving you like a handful of categories. Accounting fees, permit fees, all these different things. There are so many other categories that exist there that if you just look at the big ticket items, like I know my contractor, I know my equipment, and I got the rest in working capital, you may find yourself like way over budget because you may have $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 in other stuff, other boxes of stuff. So you got all the big things of when you moved. Now you got all these other things and they need to find a home. In this case, they need to find a home in terms of your budget. The banks aren't going to tell you how to spend it. So you need to understand the balance. The balancing act is, what do I do with the funds? I would prioritize looking at your, one thing you always look at is prioritize technology that could also help you produce dentistry from day one, but not technology that you're not going to implement from day one. So avoid the toys. If you're not utilizing CBCT today, if you're not placing implants or doing all this advanced technology and it doesn't require, then save those funds, reinvest those funds in things like marketing and things like that. CAD/CAM technology and where that technology is going very, very quickly. It feels good to say, oh, I can do same day crowns. But if that's $130,000 of your budget, where are you taking that from? Because the banks don't have an unlimited amount of your budget. So you really need to prioritize technology that you need today and say no to maybe some of the toys that you don't need until that time where you're actually doing that dentistry. If you're doing clear aligners and things like that, a digital scanner obviously makes sense. The other part about this is the one of the biggest line items that can get out of control, besides equipment, obviously, is construction. There are a lot of alternatives that exist there. I believe contractors and architects and people like that, they have well intentions, but sometimes they don't understand, okay, what is the impact on this budget? If you're saying yes to everything, you can have this beautiful office, but you have no way to get patients through the door. It's like being house poor. I call it practice poor. Beautiful office. What's your marketing strategy? I ran out of money. How are you going to do this? The travertine tile that you want to fly in from Italy? Well, it's beautiful. The glass wall? Beautiful. Does it produce dentistry? No, it doesn't. So I'd say prioritize elements. There's a lot of alternatives. You could talk with your contractor. You could talk with your architect saying, I know you love this curved wall and these pocket doors and all these different things. Are there alternatives that can help lower your budget? Now, I'm not a fan of trying to build the cheapest startup. If anybody's heard me before in my book, I always talk about this at our course. You could build the cheapest startup and just be that cheap dentist in town. But you need to have the balance. I'm not a fan of spending the most either because this is all about cash flow as well. It's all about the balance of making sure that you have a lot of different categories inside of your budget. And when it comes to marketing, I've heard this before. People say, man, marketing is expensive. Well, do you want to spend less or do you want to earn less? Make the investment when it comes to marketing. That is a priority. Now some people will ask me, and I, whether it's on Facebook groups and things like that, when it comes to the topic of like overhead expenses. So here you go. Your overhead, for your startup is 100%. It's a startup. You haven't even started producing dentistry. Your expenses when terms comes to marketing, because people ask, like, where's my marketing budget need to be? Where's my all these different elements need to be? Guess what? I'm not going to say don't worry about them, but they don't normalize for a couple of years, because the marketing budget, while it may land at that 2 to 5%, 3 to 5% or somewhere in that range of like your future, you know, production and collection, it's going to be a much, much bigger part of that budget from day one, because again, it hasn't normalized in terms of your production and collection yet. Here we go. To recap everything when it comes to lending, don't just run to a bank and say, can I get startup funding? Approach them first from this position. Know your finances. Talk with your financial advisor. Do you have a plan? Is your family, is your life, is your finances in the right place in order to approach banks? Number two is prepare to talk with the banks. Have cash. Understand your student loans. Make sure they're in the right payment. Don't refinance necessarily out of the lowest payment if that reduces your chances of getting the best funding. Have a plan. Have a business plan. Tell your story. Give yourself the leverage. Give yourself better control so that they're begging you, the banks are begging you to take their loan versus you're begging them. Compare your banks. Understand the options that are out there. Understand what's involved in that. Understand the different nuances. Don't just look at interest rate. Look at all the different terms that are in there. And then once you have the funding, really look at your budget. Prioritize. Have a nice balance that is there. So I hope this gives you some great preparation before you talk to lenders. That is a wrap on the money topic. Check out any show notes for any links and resources that we covered today. On our next episode, I was trying to find, I don't have boxing gloves, but I got a little bit of a boxing match coming up here soon. Most respected, probably greatest minds when it comes to transitions and acquiring practices. We're going to have a friendly battle talking about startups versus acquisitions. But I'll tell you this, you all win. We're going to talk about really, truly about practice ownership, but how to best prepare for these paths. So if you want to learn more about the Silver Platter Method, along with a dozen other topics to get you prepared for your startup, then join us at our next Startup Practice Blueprint course. There, we bring in not only team members from Ideal Practices, but other industry experts that have literally done this hundreds of times, as well as others that have walked in your shoes to be able to give you the blueprint to be able to open and for you to thrive in your own startup practice. Go to www.startuppracticeblueprint.com to register for our next event. It will be immersive, 25 to 30 other associates like yourself looking to take that leap into private practice ownership. That's a wrap today. I hope you got some great insights on funding, how to put yourself in that best position to get the best funding. Don't forget to check the show notes for any links and resources that we talked about today. Next time, I was looking for some boxing gloves. I don't box, but I have a special guest coming on, and this person is not only one of the industry experts, but a respected person in the world of acquisitions and transitions. And we're going to have a little bit of a battle, but a friendly battle. Talk about the pros and cons of startups and acquisitions, what to look out for. And more importantly, not really to say one is better than the other, but the fact of practice ownership and to really look at these through both of these lenses. So we'll see you there.
As we wrap up this episode, take a moment to picture yourself a year from now. Are you still in your associateship? Or are you rocking it at your own dental practice, creating beautiful smiles and making a real difference? If that's the dream, it's time to chase it. Before we split, make sure to hit subscribe, drop a review, and give us your rating. It helps us keep bringing you the good stuff that you're into. Until we meet again, keep taking that next step towards your future practice. Here's to investing in your dreams and making them a reality.